You're listening to a message delivered at the Fountains, a United Methodist Church in Fountain Hills, Arizona.
Well, it is with great pleasure, and it's a privilege to have with us today Darlene Newsom, who many of you who saw the article in the paper, who have seen our announcements coming up, you know her many accomplishments and her success, helping lead one of the things here in Arizona that I am most proud of to be associated with, and that is United Methodist Outreach Ministries. Darlene has been the recipient of many, many awards. When I was looking through something that we could use to help introduce her, there were just multiple options that all spoke of different facets of her many gifts and her dedication to the hope of ending homelessness here in Arizona. But we're going to look at just one of the introductions today, by way of introducing Darlene, from several years ago when she won the Athena Award from the Phoenix Chamber of Commerce, which is a great privilege and honor. So let's watch this introduction from the Athena Award so you get a better idea of who Darlene is.
When Darlene wakes up, first thing she thinks about is how she can make UMOM better and how she can help the homeless.
And it's important for me to level the playing field. It's important for me to be sure that all of us have the opportunity to have a better life.
She thinks about that all day long, and I bet you that's the last thought she thinks about before she goes to bed.
Choosing a life of service was really ingrained with me when I was growing up. I can remember as if it was yesterday that my father came home from work and he started loading items in a box, food and clothing. And I said, "Dad, what are you doing?" He said, "There's somebody at work that does not have clothes for their children, and they do not have food to feed their children." That was a turning point for me because I felt like that's not right. I have to change and make sure that everyone has what I have.
There is a tremendous amount of wonderful people that are UMOM, but I believe that she's the driver of what makes UMOM to what it is.
When I first came to UMOM, we were in an old hotel on Van Buren. We decided to expand our services. The Days Inn Super 8 became available across the street, and that became our new dream. And so what we've done when we've expanded our services to meet the needs the women were presenting, and how can we help them be successful?
I'll walk into the campus sometimes, and she'll be sitting talking with one of the children on campus or one of the parents. And she's not doing it because she has to. She does it because she wants to.
I absolutely love what I do. There is not a day that I do not wake up and I'm ready to go to work. I just love that my office is at UMOM, that I can see the families, I can see the children, I can hear them laugh. I just feel so fortunate and so lucky that my life has been in public service and that I have had the opportunity to work for the organizations that I've worked for and to impact as many lives as I have.
Yay! It should, yeah, wonderful. It should be no surprise the scripture passage that Darlene has chosen for today is from Matthew. And if you would turn in your Bible, or if you would turn your attention to the screen, Matthew 25, 35 to 40, Linda's going to read to us, and then we will welcome Darlene to share with us.
"Then the king will say to those on his right, 'Enter, you who are blessed by my Father. Take what's coming to you in this kingdom. It's been ready for you since the world's foundation, and here's why. I was hungry, and you fed me. I was homeless, and you gave me a room. I was shivering, and you gave me clothes. I was sick, and you stopped to visit. I was in prison, and you came to me.' Then those sheep are going to say, 'Master, what are you talking about? When did we ever see you hungry and feed you, thirsty and give you drink? And when did we ever see you sick or in prison and come to you?' Then the king will say, 'I'm telling the solemn truth. Whenever you did one of these things to someone overlooked or ignored, that was me. You did it to me.'" Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church.
Ladies and gentlemen, help me welcome Darlene Newsom.
Well, good morning. I just feel very fortunate to be here today and to share the message of you, Mom. You know, someone before church said, "You're taking your Sunday to come here. We're so thankful, and I can't believe you did this." And hey, I am just proud to be here, and I'm proud of what the United Methodist Churches have done with you, Mom, and especially the Fountains. I mean, how supportive you've been to us and all the services that we provide. And we could not do what we do without the support of the church. And we were founded back in 1964. And actually, originally, our first mission was to serve those in poor communities and going into the communities, visiting the poor, building playgrounds, delivering food. So that was kind of our humble beginning. But back in the early 1990s, and I was not at UMOM at that time. I've been at UMOM for 13 years. But there was a need for shelter for homeless families. From what I understand, they did like a tent city down at the Capitol. And Rose Mofford was our governor then. And she said, "This can't be happening." And so that's really when the first shelter for homeless families started in the valley. And the only place that we could find was an old hotel on Van Buren. And many of people don't know this story, but we actually started negotiations to purchase the hotel. And I think the original asking price was like $2.5 million. And I wish I could say I negotiated the price on this, but it actually, at the bottom line, it came out that we paid $25,000 for this hotel. And we got the price down to $125,000, and the city of Phoenix gave us $100,000. The Methodist Conference gave us $25,000. And so we purchased it, and the city of Phoenix said, "Oh, you don't need to pay us back." But guess what the conference said? "You need to give us back the $25,000. So I know Bishop Bob likes that story, but maybe. But we ended up paying $25,000. We were great stewards to that property. And as you heard on the video, you know, it was time for us to make a difference. I mean, the families, we had long waiting lists. The property was falling apart, never meant to be a homeless shelter. And the second floor was falling down to the first floor, and we knew we needed to do something. And so that's where it actually didn't start off as a $24 million campaign. It started off as a $12 million campaign. But we all know when you get involved in construction projects, things start adding up. And so it ended up being a $24 million campaign. And I have to say that, you know, it's unbelievable to me that we were able to raise the $24 million in the middle of an economic downturn. And but this community just really rallied around you, Mom. And the start of that campaign was focused on our churches. And the churches are really the ones that set the pace and launched out the campaign. We raised well over $3 million at the beginning of this campaign from the churches. And that's important because, you know, so many times when we go out and we talk about money and dollars to support services, the government is always the first to come back and say, you know, why don't the churches step up? And that's why I felt the churches do step up, and especially our Methodist churches step up. And so I wanted to be able to go out there in this campaign and say the churches have stepped up. They are our foundation. We are here because of them. Now it's time for the rest of you to give. And you're going to have to tell me when I've gone 20 minutes. I can kind of see the clock back there.
I don't go 20 minutes.
You don't? Well, how long do I have then? Let's talk a little bit about the UMOM services. And, you know, I'm proud to say, you know, when I first came to UMOM, our budget was about $2.3 million. And today our budget is just a little shy of $13 million. And we've grown, but we've grown for the right reasons. Because the services were needed. Homeless families are the fastest growing segment of our homeless population. So it was important that we just didn't grow to grow. We have grown strategically through careful planning and to be really a leader in breaking that cycle of homelessness. And that's kind of what we're all about. It is about UMOM services. It is about our emergency shelter. Now, when we moved across the street, we were able to expand, and now we have 150 families that we care for on any given night. We have 7.5 acres there. How many of you here have been down to our main campus? Yeah, I'm thinking, you know, more than half of you have been down to the main campus. And I always like to think of our campus as a community within a community, because that's kind of what we developed. Because it's important to have that community and that sense of belonging in order to move forward in your life. And we really established UMOM around the philosophy of a wellness approach, that you really have to approach an individual from the spiritual, the emotional, and the physical side. And I think we've done a good job at gathering the services that can reach most of those objectives. And at our emergency shelter, we've got case management, we have child care services, we have job training. Anything that you need to move forward in your life, I feel we've been able to plan at UMOM. But it's just not UMOM doing those services. We have 40 different partners that help us. And so when we identify a service that needs to be provided, like job training, you know, we can do job training, and we have some job training I'll talk about. But who is good in the community at getting people jobs? And AWE is an organization that exists in the Valley, and they do really good job at that. And so when we were looking at employment services, we said, let's go out and get a representative from AWE to come to our facility and help our individuals get jobs. And I'm proud to say that last year, 310 of our residents were able to obtain employment because of that relationship. And Bobby is our employment specialist, and he has an office at UMOM, but he actually sits in the lobby because he thinks that's the best place to reach everyone, and not many people can get past Bobby. And so he has like a big whiteboard with all the jobs listed. He produces pamphlets every week that tell individuals who's hiring, what the wages are. If you have a criminal background, that's okay. If you don't have your high school diploma or GED, they will still hire you. These are the wages. But what's more important is he also identifies what the potential is for advancement in that employment. So it's not just a beginning wage job. It's a job that they can grow with and have opportunity and support their family. Also at our main campus, we have an extended shelter, which used to be called our transitional shelter, and that's where a family can stay for up to 2 years. The average length of stay, actually at our emergency shelter, where they can stay up to 120 days, is 85 days. In the extended shelter, which we have 46 units that are equipped with kitchenettes, they can stay up to 2 years, but the average is just about a year. And then we have permanent affordable housing that we provide in the community. Let me just advance this. I'm probably getting ahead of myself. There's the front. And then our emergency shelter, which was the Old Days Inn. And that courtyard is kind of interesting because that's kind of a gathering place for most of our families. And underneath that canopy, we actually have a splash pad. And so right about this time of year, we get it turned on. And so it's really cool after when the kids get out of school to go out into the courtyard and see the kids playing on the playground and splashing around on the splash pad. We also have our Hobbs Child Development Center. And, you know, child care is really a key service for many of our families because there's not enough affordable quality child care available to families. And so our Child Development Center is really unique. It's nationally accredited, and it's licensed for 120 children, and we care for children from birth through after-school program. And it's just, we exceed the state standards for staff-child ratio. For instance, in our infant care, we have 8 infants, and then we always have 3 staff when we have 8 infants, and normally there's 1 or 2 volunteers, and sometimes it's me, because I just loved to be with the babies. But infant care is very expensive. And when I first came to you, Mom, we didn't have infant care as part of our program. And I thought it was really important to start infant care because it's so hard to find in the community. Many times you'll see our parents at the bus stop, and one was going this way to take a child to an infant care center, and they had to go, you know, 15 more miles and take a second bus to get their children to another center. And so it was real important for us to have a real comprehensive center on the campus. And you'll see some of the children there. We also have our wellness center. And our wellness center is licensed by the Department of Health Services. And Phoenix Children's Hospital is located there 3 days a week. And then 2 days a week, we have health care for the homeless. And they care for the adults over the age of 26. But Phoenix Children's Hospital does all the immunizations for the children. They do all the well baby checks. It's actually more like an urgent care. We have two pediatricians that are there 3 days a week for like 10 hours a day. And we have nursing staff. So they can do anything from setting a broken arm to doing an IV. They identify some of the special illnesses that our children present them with. 60% of our children have asthma. So we do a lot of asthma clinics. And like Dr. Christensen, who founded the clinic, and the, he has also a cruise mobile that goes around to different sites in the valley, he said that what they see at UMOM, most pediatricians or doctors just read about in their medical books, but they actually see those conditions of the children that are presented at UMOM. And that's because so many of our children have lived in poverty, and so many of them have not had consistent medical care. Aside from the main campus, we have the Watkins facility, and I know many of you serve at Watkins. In fact, this church served over 2,000 meals last year from Watkins. And I do have some news I'm going to share in a little bit about my plans for Watkins, but we've been involved in what they call overflow shelter for 25 years in the valley, and it's evolved over time. And some of you may remember when Watkins was only a seasonal program and that it was only open from November until April. And so when I first came to you, Mom, I said, well, why are we open November to April when it's 115 degrees in the summer and we don't have the overflow shelter for those who need that? And they said, well, you know, it was a concept developed out in New York and it just made sense that we just followed their concept. But no one thought that, hey, the summertime is the worst weather that we have here. And so over the years, it became more of an issue, especially when we started seeing an increase in homelessness and then more homeless who were dying on the streets because of the heat. And so the city of Phoenix decided, you know, this is something we need to do year-round. And at that time, we actually had shelter for men, too. We had over 300 men on the one side where the women are. And then we had, I think, 20 slots for women and about 15 slots for families. But it got to the point where the population was just growing, and we were transporting people from the downtown area to our shelter for 5 hours a day, and it just didn't make much sense. And so there's another program in Phoenix that was willing to take the men, and we said, let's keep with the women, let's keep with the families. And as the program has grown, and now it's a year-round program, we have up to 120 women every single night, and we usually have around 15 or 16 families who are living there. But we call it really, it's a basic shelter. It provides a place for someone to sleep, food, clothing, and a place for them to shower. But to me, that's always not been enough. And on my radar, when it was time, because we had a lot to take care of with you, Mom, I wanted something better for the women. And you can see where this is the sleeping quarters in the back where the women sleep. And they're able to keep some of their belongings underneath their bed. But I have to tell you just a quick story. We had, we've been able to get additional dollars from United Way and the City of Phoenix to do more services for the women in the last year. And we've been able to house 119 women in permanent housing from that shelter. But there are women who are still there that, you know, who I saw 13 years ago. And there's about five of our women who we don't really know who they are. And all we know is their first name because they are so mentally ill. And we've not been able to put services into their lives because we just can't figure out, you know, because they could qualify for services if we could figure out what their identity was. But there's one particular woman who would wear like 5 layers of clothing. She didn't speak a whole lot. And we started working with her, with a case manager, this last couple months. And we found out her first and last name, so she can get income and get services, and so we can house her. But she's been coming there for 13 years, and she was a mail order bride from Vietnam. And she was severely abused when she got here to the U.S., which sent her really into a downward spiral. And so now we do know who she is, and we are getting her services, and she is opening up. So, you know, there's always hope for everyone that we serve. But the women have always been very special to me because we've never had, I feel, an adequate shelter to house our women. But we've got plans for that, and I'm going to tell you about that when I move on. But permanent affordable housing is another area. We've got these facilities that we operate. Some of you may not know, it's just not about the main campus in Watkins. We actually have other sites. We have Sororo, we have Fillmore, we've got Sunland, and we've got the Legacy Crossing, which is right across the street. And Sunland actually is 81 bedroom units for the elderly. It's a Section 8 project. So it's for the elderly who have very little income. We're able to provide housing there. But our newest project is going to be North Mountain Village. It's in North Phoenix. It's going to have 48 units, mostly 3-bedroom units. And those units are going to be for the very low-income families. And altogether, we have once that's completed, we'll have over 340 units of affordable housing. So affordable housing is some subsidized, some Section 8 housing, but we also raise money to pay the rents down further. So sometimes when you talk about affordable, many people feel that, you know, this just low rents are enough. But many of our families cannot even afford that. So we supplement rent for many of our families. We use a formula up to $200 a month for up to a year. And that helps our families stabilize, stay housed, because the main thing is that we do not want families to come back to you, Mom, once they leave. And we know now, from all the data that we're collecting, only 5% of the families in the last 2 years have returned to homelessness. Because we have a central data system in the Valley that we all plug into. But to me, only 5% return rate, that's a pretty good rate. I mentioned the different parts of our services at UMOM are, you know, the physical and the spiritual side, the physical and the emotional side I've talked about with case management and our healthcare center. But the spiritual side, when we were across the street, we had a Zimmerman Chapel that was really small, and it was kind of tucked away, and it was always locked. And it always bothered me that it wasn't used more. And so when we moved across the street, I said, listen, whatever we do, I want a chapel across the street that's visible, that our clients can go into at any time, and hopefully we'll get somebody to come in and do more services on Sundays and other times for our families. So many of you have been down to UMOM know that the chapel is front and center, so when you walk through the lobby, you can't miss when you walk into the courtyard. The chapel's right there. We had beautiful stained glass windows across the street, and we took those windows and installed them in the new chapel. And I'm proud to say that we have retired Pastor Kelly Bender, who was at Paradise Valley Methodist Church for many years, a great supporter of UMOM, has now been assigned as our part-time pastor at UMOM. And I can't begin to tell you what a difference that has made for our families.
And this is his schedule at UMOM. And I know on Sundays he packs the chapel, so we probably are going to need to look at moving some of the services into the gymnasium there. But on Sundays, he has a service. He also has a children's service. He has lots of volunteers that come with him. So if any of you are interested in at any time coming down on a Sunday, that would be great. Monday night, he goes and he meets with all the women at Watkins. And Tuesday nights, he has what he calls chapel hours. And it's kind of cool. He just the chapel's just open. That is his office. And I'm amazed, because I've been there on Tuesday evening, people are lined up to go in and just have some time with Pastor Kelly. And in fact, right now he's going to do a marriage ceremony, and he's done several baptisms at UMOM, and he also has the capacity to go out and do different hospital visits for our clients, not only staying at UMOM, but in some of our affordable housing units. So we're just real excited to have Pastor Kelly there. His service concentrates on forgiveness and healing, and that's really what our families need. They need to know that it's okay, they're forgiven, and that they can heal and they can move on with their lives. And to me, that's one of the most important things for our families to understand and to feel, and also just that community that we provide that I mentioned earlier about that sense of belonging. Now I'm going to share with you some new things that are going on at UMOM. One is our family housing hub. Our vision at UMOM is to be a leader in breaking the cycle of homelessness. And one of the ways we've done that is the federal government, who gives us some dollars for our budget, has said that all communities who receive money from the federal government need to have a centralized intake assessment and all use the same tool. So UMOM is the centralized assessment center for all homeless families in the valley. So all homeless families come to UMOM for a common assessment. And we have over 12 partners who are working with us on this partnership. We also have some hours open on the East Valley, and we're looking at the West Valley to open another little hub for families. And what's great about this is we're all using the same tool, and that tool is called the FSPIDAT, and what a name that is. And it stands for Vulnerability Index Service Priority Decision Assistance Tool. I had to write that one down. But it's a great tool, and what's so exciting about this, it's really, it's a turning point, because I'm all about best practices. I'm all about doing the best job we possibly can and being the best steward to the funds that we receive, and most of all, serving the families and the children that we serve. And so this tool identifies which intervention is going to most likely end someone's homelessness. How cool is that? So we have a family come in, and it will tell us, this family can end their homelessness in emergency shelter. And it's based on a scoring system. If this family is placed in your extended shelter or transitional living, that will end their homelessness. This family, rapid rehousing, will end their homelessness. And then about 5% of our families fall into a permanent supportive housing group, and they have the most barriers to housing and are probably going to need the longer-term assistance to end their homelessness. Right now, we're seeing in our community that we need a little bit more emergency shelter beds, and we need more rapid rehousing dollars. And rapid rehousing is where we supplement someone's rent and other expenses up to a year until they can afford that. And so, to me, it's really cool that it's not like grabbing straws, like, we need more emergency shelter, we need more housing. We know what type of housing we need because we have good data. And how great is that? And, you know, in a week time, we usually average about 700 calls from homeless families, and that's just in 1 week. And of those 700, we're able to divert about 25% of those, because all they needed was information. All they needed was a list of affordable housing that's available in the community. In the old days, those families would have been on our list, our waiting list to come into UMOM, but that's not really what they needed. So what a great way to strategically use our resources so much smarter. And I know today we have around 70 families on our waiting list, and I know half of those families are living on the streets. And so many times I'm asked, well, how long are you going to be at UMOM? And I said, I'm going to be at UMOM until we have zero on our waiting list. And I always tell everybody, don't wait till I'm 80. Let's do that now. But I'm just excited that we have these possibilities and just the data that we're using. And that goes back to being the leader in breaking that cycle of homelessness. Guiding Star. The reason I put this up here is this is a new thing that's going on. We are looking to buy Guiding Star, which is located right next to our affordable housing across the street, our old shelter. There's an old hotel. Here I go again with an old hotel. And Native American Connection is currently providing a residential program for substance abusing families there. They are building a new facility. And so we are going to buy that facility and move our women from Watkins there. Watkins is currently owned by the city of Phoenix. It's an old diaper factory, never meant to be a shelter. And it's in an industrial area. And we have this deal, the city made this deal before my time, that once the women come in, they can't leave. So to me, it's almost like a prison. And then during the day, they have to go back downtown. And they're homeless on the streets. And there's so much, they're victims. They're targets for crime. And I want to be able to have an adequate shelter for our women. So at Guiding Star, that will be our adequate shelter for women. They'll be able to stay there during the day. We'll be able to really wrap our arms around them and get them permanently housed. And many of them have families that they've been separated from. Some will be able to reunite them with their children and their families. But what a great thing to do. And so we're right now working on a campaign. It's probably going to be a $4 million campaign. We already have our first million in from a donor. And I will be sending information as we develop this. But we will still need you to feed at Watkins, because now it will be you'll be feeding at our new facility, because it's going to be probably a little bit closer to come to. But we'll still have the same type of feeding and volunteer program. But I'm just excited to be able to do this for the women. It's time that we do this. And I think everyone will be amazed at the results because of having that safer place for them to stay. Helpings. Many of you have been down to Helpings. That's our social enterprise. We have at UMOM a barista food service training program. We have our catering business, and we do about 55 caterings a month at UMOM. And we have our Helpings Cafe, which is open from 7 to 3. And we are so excited about that. Our partnership in that is with Starbucks, and they give us 80% off wholesale, so that's why they're our partners, and they've been great partners. But we cook everything from scratch. And we usually, at this point, we've been open for 1 year. We're averaging about $1,000 to $1,200 a day in our cafe, which has been wonderful. And many of our baristas have been hired on. Many of them have gone into jobs with Starbucks. And so we're just real excited about that. And, you know, it kind of, this sign is big and visible. So you can see if you buy, you know, a cup of coffee, you help a homeless child with school supplies. So you can attach what you buy in the cafe with what actually it translates into programs. And then we have our job training program, which is our barista and our food service training. And we also work with Manna House, which has a program for veterans. And we work with Tumbleweed, which has homeless youth. And so we actually open up our training programs to those and other community programs, because we feel as if we need to share and we all can benefit. But I'm just so thankful for everything that you do with UMOM. And I know we have our ambassadors, which is Karen Downey, Joanne Dunleavy, and Joan Hager. And I hope I didn't, Yeager. And then we have those who organize our Watkins meals, which is Lois Harris. and Linda Knutson. Knutson, close. And then Carol Jenkins, who's so active in our auxiliary. But, you know, I have to say that, you know, I'm not, the Fountains has always been very, very supportive at many different levels in our service at UMOM. Back at the table, there's some additional information on how you can get involved if you're interested in getting involved. And we have a golf tournament coming up if you're interested in playing golf. If you're not, you can come out to the dinner. And then we have a helicopter drop with all these golf balls. And then you get prizes if your golf ball gets closest or in the hole. So I have some of those tickets, too. But I just want to thank you for your service. And before I end, I know that I'm probably done with my time, but I have to just tell you about legislative priorities real quick, because I had a conversation with Senator Kavanaugh about something that he suggested pass at this state's legislative session. And I have to tell you, this is not a Republican or Democrat issue. It's really about doing the right thing. I had 30 minutes, and I also visited with Governor Ducey. Our policies that we passed this last legislative session is totally against the poor and the most vulnerable who live in our community. It is a disaster, and on many fronts. And I'm not very happy with it, as you can tell, but it's not going to stop me from advocating for those who are the less fortunate who live among us, because many of the policies affect those that we serve. One in particular is limiting TANF benefits to families who live in poverty to 1 year. And basically, the most any family can get, and it's the old welfare. So I'll just say welfare because people kind of know what I'm talking about, is $287 a month. It's the most any family gets, no matter how many children they have. You know, I always hear that people say, oh, why do they keep having children? Because they can get more welfare. Well, that was back in the 70s. That's not true. And the most any family can get is $287. What that means for one of our families is if this is a mother who has five children, and she's living in a Section 8 housing, and she herself has a traumatic brain injury, and this is a family, she has a traumatic brain injury from a domestic violence incident, and she has two children who are disabled. That means she can only get welfare for 1 year. Nationally, it's 5 years, but Arizona has decided 1 year is enough. And so they'll have no money to pay for their utilities. They'll have no money to pay for what food stamps doesn't pay for, which is diapers, personal hygiene items, laundry soap. And that $287 a month isn't even enough to cover those kinds of things. So our state has decided, 1 year's enough for you. Child care subsidies, they didn't expand child care subsidies. They took $89 million away in 2009, and they've only given us $4 million back. There's 8,000 children on a waiting list in our state for child care subsidies. And that helps somebody get back to work and help pay for their child care. It doesn't pay for the whole bill, but pays for part of that. Who wouldn't want that? Who wouldn't want our families out working and trying to support their families and supporting their families? But they won't be able to get child care subsidies. The other thing, I'll mention one more thing, and that is the Attorney General. There was a mortgage settlement that came into our state to help those who are homeless, underemployed, and those who have lost our homes during the economic downturn and were foreclosed on. Well, the state legislature decided that they're going to use that money to balance their budget. So UMOM is going to lose $600,000 from their budget starting July 1. That money was never meant to balance the state budget. It was meant to help those who need help with housing. That's wrong. To me, that's ethical and not moral, and that was a wrong thing to do. And so, you know, what I visited Senator Kavanaugh on was he was trying to criminalize homeless behaviors, those standing on street corners asking for money. And I know all of us are annoyed by that, but if you criminalize it, then you add one more barrier that will not help that person get housing, because there's a lot of housing that you cannot get because you have a criminal record. So I went to visit with Senator Kavanaugh about this. And the reason he wanted this bill was because he said he was annoyed by it and it made him late getting home at night. So you criminalize a homeless behavior because of your own needs. To me, that's not why we elect our legislators. And, you know, it's just really hard for me because so many of these policies affect those that we serve. And it also means that our waiting list today is, you know, 80 families. I can tell you, I'm probably going to stand up here next year, if I'm invited back, if I haven't taken too much time, and tell you, I hate to say this, but we're going to have more in our waiting list. So we can all take charge of that on who we elect and who represent us and make sure that they represent the values and they care about those who are less fortunate in our community. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this week's Applying It to Life from the Fountains. For more information on our faith community or to support this outreach with a donation, be sure to visit us online at www.reachtouchteach.com.